Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And before we get started this week, we've noted that the 14th anniversary of 9/11 is approaching. I want to take a minute to remember someone named Marcy Borders. She's the so-called 9/11 dust lady, and she died from cancer yesterday at the age of 42. Now, she was in the Twin Tower collapses and was likely doomed possibly from that day. But let's also remember that the EPA, the same EPA that ruined the Colorado River that we just reported on for you 2 weeks ago, remember that on September 18th, 2001, EPA head Christy Todd Whitman said, quote, given the scope of the tragedy from last week, I am glad to reassure the people of New York and Washington, D.C. that their air is safe to breathe and their water is safe to drink, end quote. Those are just some of the kind of lies we attempt to bust every week on this show, and we even warned you a week earlier about a global market crash, which we just saw on Black Monday, and this week we're going to get more geopolitical updates on ISIS, Congress, and CENTCOM, plus more positive good news next week stories about ways that we are indeed winning. But first, the massive federal honeypot blackmail operation known as Ashley Madison. James, the Associated Press is reporting hundreds of U.S. government employees, including some with sensitive jobs in the White House and Congress and law enforcement agencies, used internet connections in their federal offices to access and pay membership fees to the cheating website Ashley Madison. The AP traced many of the accounts exposed by hackers back to federal workers. They included at least two assistant U.S. attorneys, an information technology administrator in the executive office of the president, a division chief, an investigator, and a trial attorney in the Justice Department, a government hacker at the Homeland Security Department, and another DHS employee who indicated he worked on a U.S. counterterrorism response team. Few actually paid for their services with their government email accounts, but the AP traced their government internet connections logged by the website for over 5 years and reviewed their credit card transactions to identify them. They included workers at more than two dozen Obama administration agencies, including the Departments of State, Defense, Justice, Energy, Treasury, Transportation, and Homeland Security. Others came, you know, just from House and Senate computer networks. The AP, they note, are not naming the government subscribers it found because they are not elected officials or accused of a crime. So the background, if you've missed any of this, hackers this week released detailed records on millions of people registered with the website 1 month after the break-in at Ashley Madison's parent company, the Toronto-based Avid Life Media Incorporated. Their slogan, life assured, having an affair, yada, yada. So, James, there's a bunch of stuff spilling out right now, like somebody used Tony Blair's email address to sign up to Ashley Madison. Zira Hedge has the screen grab for that. But I think if we add in a few more stories, we'll see the really even more sinister part of this. And we'll grab another one from globalnews.ca. 1 in 5 Ottawa residents are on Ashley Madison. And they note that the Toronto-based website, created for married people to find new lovers, is popular in Ottawa. One federal government employee told the Global News, of course, anonymously, he says the highly educated, well-employed population of Ottawa is just that much more open to experimenting. And it's not just Canada's capital region. Ashley Madison data provided to the National Post suggests international capitals like D.C., Athens, Greece, Berlin, Germany, and Oslo, Norway also top their country's respective per capita lists. So Ashley Madison CEO Noel Bitterman told the newspaper that strong, risk-taking personalities who do well in politics are simply more likely to stray from their spouse. So James, on some level, this can seem just like another, oh, stuff got hacked and people might be embarrassed. But I think we're getting to the heart of what sets this apart from other so-called hacking stories, James.
Well, that's right. And the word of the day, I guess, for this is schadenfreude. Of course, people are going to take a look at these Congress critters and parliament pests and other politicians in all of these capitals, including, of course, Ottawa, getting busted in a hack like this and think, well, it couldn't have happened to a more deserving bunch of people, especially because it was clearly their own actions that that ultimately, you know, led to this. But I think we have to be careful about the lynching that can take place here. Of course, no one's going to stand up for a bunch of cheaters like this, but the point of this is that this really is a sign, a taste of what can happen when these types of websites, and not just these types of websites, but really any website that collects any of your personal information and or credit card data or whatever, gets hacked and released to the public in a big way like this. And we can there's a couple of stories that at least broach this idea. One from Washington Post talking about don't gloat about the Ashley Madison leak. It's about way more than infidelity. Talking about the nature of internet privacy and what this means, and citing an actually an interesting little story that was written about what if the entire internet and everything was hacked and everyone's entire internet history was released. It would be the end of the internet as we know it, basically. Because there's all sorts of things that people are doing online that they don't want everyone and their neighbors and everyone to know about. So I think we have to be mindful of that. And one other type of repercussion that can happen from this, there's a Slate.com article from 2003, What Happens to Cheating Soldiers, where they note, what sort of punishment do soldiers face for cheating on their spouses? The military penalty remains pretty harsh, up to a year in confinement, plus a dishonorable discharge, which entails the forfeiture of all retirement pay. The article goes on to note that it's extremely unlikely and unusual for that to actually be prosecuted, and difficult for it to do so because of the sort of legal standard that they have to meet in the prosecution of that. So not a lot of soldiers do get prosecuted for that, but it is certainly one of the ramifications that could happen, except, James, I think you have an update on that.
I've already seen the Pentagon gives free pass to Ashley Madison cheaters, saying they're not going to investigate anything, even though you can kind of look in that Slate article you just mentioned actually goes into Article 134 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, saying that, well, we won't really investigate it, you know, unless it like lowers the morale on a base or damages the public's faith in the armed forces. So I guess you could, one, argue that that'd be like saying I'm disappointed in Obama. It's like, yeah, I never had faith in it in the first place. So you didn't really destroy something that wasn't there in the first place. However, this situation seems to fit that to a T, that you have lowered morale and you have damaged the public's faith in not only armed forces, but every department we just listed earlier, James. So
If that's what really took to damage the good reputation, the sterling reputation of the U.S. military. But coming up next on this story, there's $500 million worth of lawsuits that have now been filed against Ashley Madison for this. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out for the ramifications on future such hacks and leaks. And then also a rather dark update, Ashley Madison suicides over website hack. And so now we're starting to see the first batch of people whose lives are ending because of this hack. And again, I mean, I know a lot of people aren't going to be sympathetic to people who are cheating on their spouses and things like that, but eventually this is going to start biting into other areas of people's lives as these hacks become more commonplace.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And we've seen it before and we'll probably see it again and again. James, our second story this week on episode 238 of New World Next Week, I guess, goes in some way from what we've always kind of talked about as virtual flag terrorism and privacy and piracy to another area of who created what. And we've been discussing ISIS for quite a while now. So let's take one from allgov.com. Congress avoids Obama's call for a resolution of war against ISIS. The U.S. has been at war with ISIS for a year, or have we always been at war with Eurasia? But there's still been no official authorization for the war, but we can't blame Obama for this one. Presidents often dodge asking Congress to sanction U.S. military operations against a foreign enemy, but that's not the case this time. Obama submitted to Capitol Hill a, quote, complex draft resolution that authorizes the president to use force against the Islamic State, this according to Garrett Epps at The Atlantic. Some repugs in Congress, however, won't touch the authorization, not because it goes too far and could potentially draw the U.S. into a protracted conflict, but because it doesn't go far enough. Obama's request specifies that the use of U.S. ground troops is forbidden, verboten, and it puts a 3-year limit on the authorization. Republican lawmakers would prefer, quote, something far more open-ended and sweeping, Epps wrote. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida wants a simple authorization that tells the White House to defeat and destroy ISIL, period. Another Republican running for president, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, insists Obama's limitations would harm the war effort. James, others in Congress say Obama's proposal goes too far. Actually, one, Tim Kaine, Democrat out of Virginia, pushing for Congress to get a chance to debate this U.S. involvement against ISIS. And if even he sponsored a bill that would be much more limited. and it's co-sponsored by Republican, but it has gone nowhere. In a different note, James, CENTCOM, that's Central Command, they were supposed to give a report to the Inspector General, who inspects all these government agencies. The IG says, yeah, we think CENTCOM lied to us. They changed the intelligence that was given to them by the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, so it was reworked by CENTCOM to make the ISIS war sound so much more upbeat. So those are some of the more pretty open, obvious lies about ISIS and the war of terror from the stateside view, James. So what's your take?
Well, it's interesting to get that story about CENTCOM fiddling with the DIA data because, of course, we just had the ex-DIA chief Michael Flynn come out on Al Jazeera and warn that it was a willful decision to fund and train the Syrian Islamists in ISIS. So, yes, I mean, well, welcome to our last year's reporting that this was a creation of the United States government. But, yes, now the DIA, Michael Flynn, coming out and admitting it. And so here we have this story that this is supposedly about newer data from the DIA, but obviously I think it applies to the old 2011-2012 intelligence where the DIA was saying, hey, this is going to create an Islamic State faction. Basically, they were saying this is going to create, you know, the chance for some sort of Islamic extremist state to come into view. So interesting that that development's coming on. But of course, all of this is predicated on the lie that ISIS is some sort of independent group that just sprang out of nowhere and took the world by surprise, which of course is a load of poppycock. Please do see Who is Really Behind ISIS, episode 295 of the Corbett Report from last year, where we detailed the various groups that are behind the rise of ISIS, including, of course, Turkey, who has been, I think, more increasingly in the spotlight. And I think it's interesting that some of these stories are coming up. For example, we just had one from McClatchy, Syrian rebels, Turkey tipped Al-Qaeda group to U.S.-trained fighters. So people who don't know about this story, basically there were a bunch of U.S.-trained moderates who entered into Syria to undermine ISIS. And, oh, lo and behold, they were instantly captured. And so it turns out now the latest accusations that basically Turkish intelligence tipped off ISIS that these guys were coming and when and where, and that's how they got nabbed. But Turkey has just come out to officially deny those allegations, so take it for what that's worth. Meanwhile, airstrikes kill 41 Kurdish fighters, Turkish military says. The country has been bombing PKK targets in northern Iraq and in mostly Kurdish southeastern Turkey since July 24th. So, yes, that agreement that was signed for ISIL-free zones a couple of weeks ago between the U.S. and Turkey is, as we reported at the time, just about keeping the Kurds down and keeping the Kurds under bombardment. So, again, there's so many lies going on here. I think, really, ISIS is just being pushed, and they are trying to genuinely, I think, push this agenda right now to undermine ISIS, because that's the point all along. You put the chess piece in that square of the board, and then you come in and take over that square of the board. So I think it's that's where we're moving into. Obama's trying to get a war resolution. The Republicans want an even more aggressive war resolution. I really think that we're seeing the shape up for some sort of fall invasion.
Well, and it should always be obvious that that's the only real difference between the two phony sides here in the States is how much war each side wants. It's not like one is against it and one is for it. And James, I think it's amazing how quickly sort of the updates come. As we did, we just talked about that 2 weeks ago. Oh, they made that deal with Turkey, and then there you see it, killing Kurdish fighters just within a couple of weeks. So it does floor me sometimes how quickly a lot of these things happen. And just by paying attention week after week, you start to be able to add it up and say, oh, I've seen this. I know how this is going to play out. Our third and final story this week, James, as we typically do and as we have done all throughout 2015, is try and highlight some kind of good news. And this, James, may be one of our not unmitigated good news, but it is good because the truth will out, and we'll take it from the antimedia.org. Independent GMO researchers FOIA'd email show $25,000 Monsanto grant. In January, 2015, a FOIA request filed by an Oakland organization called U.S. Right to Know requested email records between academics, scientists, and representatives of big agriculture. The FOIA requests were sent to 14 scientists at four public universities, University of Nebraska, Florida, UC Davis, and the University of Illinois, requesting info on communications and email records. The FOIA findings included communications of well-known, staunch proponents of GM crops like Kevin Falta, a professor and chairman of the Horticultural Sciences Department at the University of Gainesville in Florida, who received a $25,000 grant from Monsanto. The emails reveal the funds, quote, could be used at his discretion in support of his research and outreach projects, end quote. About 4,600 pages of emails and other records were obtained from Folta, and according to the communications, the ties between allegedly objective scientists and big agriculture run deep. This even from Nature magazine, quote, the documents show that Monsanto paid for Folta's travel to speak to U.S. students, farmers, politicians, and the media. Other industry contacts occasionally sent him suggested responses to common questions about GMOs. Now, of course, it's not uncommon for scientists to get corporate funding through grants, but these revelations are troublesome because Folta is sold to the public as an independent authority on GMOs. In fact, the biotech industry-funded site GMOAnswers.com, which seeks to dispel myths about the dangers of GM foods and pesticides, myths about the dangers of pesticides, they haven't disclosed Folta's financial ties to Monsanto. Nature goes on to say that the Oakland Group U.S. Right to Know is, quote, probing what it sees as collusion between the agricultural biotechnology industry and academics who study science, economics, and communication. So in layman's terms, as the anti-media puts it, Right to Know is made up of ordinary people who seek to make corruption transparent and obliterate illusions of objectivity. James, I started to look into this guy. He was on the freaking Joe Rogan podcast a few months ago, which means you're on there for 3 hours, and the only mention of Kevin Folta being paid by Monsanto is in the comments down below. And then I looked at his blog, and I looked at his Twitter feed, at Kevin Folta, and now it's pretty much all hand-wringing about anti-science fear-mongers and how all the good scientists are being questioned and attacked. And he repeatedly says, quote, I'm grateful for the support, end quote, of Big Ag. And finally, guess what his blog is called, James? Illumination.
You can't make this stuff up, can you? That's, I mean, couldn't have happened to more deserving scientists, I guess. Yes, well, exactly. I think you raised an important point there. It's about the fact that he goes around parading himself as an independent expert. Oh, by the way, I haven't been telling anyone, by the way, but I'm on Monsanto's payroll. I think that's pretty important, and not just from our perspective as people who are against a GMO, but from the wider perspective of ethics in science. I mean, go to any major sort of ethics in science, ethical foundation texts or what have you. They will all talk about conflict of interest. I'll put one in the show notes from columbia.edu that talks about the nature of conflicts of interest in science. It's why every major paper from every major reputable journal will have the people who wrote the paper will list their conflicts of interest at the end, or potential conflicts of interest. I mean, there's a reason they do that, and that's so that you know, okay, oh, this guy is actually paid by Monsanto to go travel to LA to be on the Joe Rogan podcast. Maybe that's going to affect what he says or what he doesn't say or the way that he approaches the subject. Maybe I should think about how or what he's excluding from this conversation. So again, if he came out and openly said it, that would be one thing. The fact that he hasn't said it until it was forced out by Freedom of Information Act shows that there's something that he wants to hide there. But I think, again, let's not lose the forest for this tree. Yes, a $25,000 grant to this one scientist is one thing, but the bigger picture is something that I wrote about for the Forecaster a week or two ago, the business of biotech, talking about the billions with a B that have been funneled into the biotech industry to create that industry, to make it into a multinational, multi-billion dollar industry. And behind all of this are the exact same families that you would expect. The Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, all of these mega wealthy foundations have been funding this industry since its inception, since before its inception. It was the Green Revolution, which was to spread Rockefeller petrochemical industrial farming practices around the world and make farmers get into debt with the IMF World Bank to pay for it. And then they converted that into the Gene Revolution, where now farmers are paying for the privilege of planting Monsanto's seeds every year, because of course seed saving is against the contract, so they end up with waves of dead farmers from suicides. This is a huge issue, and it's not just about this one scientist, but this is one key into the issue. So people who are interested in the bigger picture can read my Business of Biotech article.
James will include a couple of other hashtag good news next week headlines. Judge finds Toronto police officer guilty in G20 mass arrests. federal judge orders the DEA to release their information about their illegal mass surveillance, and the German government has charged a CIA spy with treason. He got busted for infiltrating the BND. So lots of interesting things going on. So, of course, we've been focusing on solutions and good news, and you can do that with hashtag good news next week and a couple of other New World next week updates from our buddy Brock West. Twitter shuts down 30 sites dedicated to saving politicians' deleted tweets. Former Gordon Brown advisor warns to stock up on canned food for a stock market crash. And we do have some maps for you explaining the China meltdown meeting the Black Monday. And James, I know that you and Brock West are going to go into that in the not too distant future on an Asia Pacific perspective episode. And we'll wrap up this epic New World next week, episode 238, James, by bringing it completely full circle. And this is on my Twitter account, EPA's highest paid employee and leading expert on climate change, jailed for lying about being a CIA spy in Pakistan. The EPA's highest paid employee and, of course, climate change expert, jailed for 32 months for lying to his bosses saying he was a CIA spy working in Pakistan. And the kind of funny part is that he wasn't actually up to any other nefarious things, but, you know, working on my house and reading and stuff. So I would argue that that's a much better thing than being an actual CIA spy in Pakistan or being a shill for the EPA. So, James, as we learned last week, the real job of all these little Eichmanns running the state is to protect the state, period. I'll throw it back to you, James.
That's right. Well, I mean, who's the bad guy in that story? I think it's still the EPA. And the only question is whether that employee is actually the good guy in this for stealing money from the EPA, as Walter Block would argue. There was an interesting debate on the Tom Woods Show about the ethics of taking money from the state, Block versus Bob Murphy. So I'll throw that in the show notes for people to listen to that debate. Anyway, I think we'll have to wrap it up there. But yes, some very interesting stories and interesting how it comes full circle like that. James, thank you for putting this together. Looking forward to it again next week.
My pleasure, man. Take care.